Welcome back to Logical with Ludmila, where we untangle the legal knots so that you don't have to. I'm Ludmila Malova, a U.S. qualified lawyer based in Dubai. In each episode, we break down complex law into clear, practical insights that you can actually use. In today's episode, we are going to talk about travel bans in the UAE. This is a subject that affects residents, business owners, tourists, and visitors alike. Travel bans are routine features of the UAE legal system. They're used in both criminal and civil matters, and they're fairly common in the UAE. They're not nearly as common, for example, as in other jurisdictions around the world, but this is one of the places that is where they're most effective. And so this is also one of the, perhaps the reason, the main reason why we're talking about them today. Okay, so let's kind of unpack. So what is a travel ban? I mean, it sounds pretty, for those perhaps from certain jurisdictions, it sounds a little dramatic, a travel ban. I mean, you're not able to travel. It's a ban to travel, you know, freedom of movement. However, in the UAE, it has been a mechanism that has been used quite frequently, commonly, and for a long time. And to be honest with you, it sort of even makes sense. But if from kind of a, just a legal standpoint, in terms of what kind of instrument it is, you know, it's first of all, it's a legal order. And in practice, it prevents a person from leaving the UAE and sometimes from entering the UAE. Now, when somebody's placed under the travel ban and they're outside of the UAE, that means when they, if they're allowed to board the flight, from the country of origin, wherever they're sort of traveling to the UAE from, they landed to the UAE, that means they will be arrested at the airport and taken to jail, and then sort of the proceedings will move from there. Sometimes, depending on the type of travel ban, they may not even be allowed to board the flight. So if you're not allowed to board the flight from the country of your kind of origin, that's perhaps good news, because at least you can be in your home country and not have to worry about being jailed in the UAE. But for a lot of people, they find out about travel ban when it's a little too late and they've already arrived to the UAE, they've landed at the airport, and as they're going through immigration, they get pulled aside and ultimately detained and taken into custody, and depending on the type of matter and the type of travel ban, they ultimately are jailed. So it's not just about not being able to leave the UAE or come into the UAE, is that you also, in most cases, if you have a travel ban on entry, there will at least be some time that you'll have to spend behind bars until the authorities figure out what kind of a travel ban it is and whether you should be released on bail, or whether this sort of a travel ban requires some kind of a settlement of an amount, and then you could, it could be removed altogether, or you may have to spend some time in jail. Again, depends on the nature of the travel ban, and we'll talk about the specific differences, specific cases that trigger travel bans, as, and the differences in the type of travel bans. But generally speaking, the travel ban stays in force until a specific legal condition is satisfied. And again, we'll, through today's discussion or podcast, we'll go through specific examples and kind of walk you through how long the travel ban stays in, what triggers it, and what does it mean for a person that's subject to it, and ultimately how you remove it, if at all. But from a practical standpoint, yeah, so it's what, as I said, it's a legal instrument, but once a travel ban has been ordered, the ban is circulated then to every port of exit in the UAE, and every airport, and every land border, and every seaport. There's no public database that one can, you know, basically log in and check to see if there is a list of all the people who have a travel ban placed on them entering the UAE. So, and as I mentioned earlier, therefore, in most cases, perhaps a little less now than it was before, but in most cases, a person learns about a travel ban once they are at immigration. Either coming into the UAE or leaving the UAE. So now let's talk about why does the UAE have this kind of mechanism of a travel ban, and why does it exist in the UAE? I think let's not look any further, but the demographic of this country. I mean, it's a largely largely expat population. So it's a very it's a significant portion of the population is foreigners or expats, which means that we all have a passport to go somewhere else, which effectively means that it's very easy for us to pack our bags and leave our liabilities or other obligations behind. And I've been in the UAE for a number of years now, going on to almost second decade or so. And I have seen this. I have seen every time you've got some sort of economic cycle, there is there's a wave of people packing their bags and running to the airport, leaving cars behind, leaving their sort of mortgages unpaid, and all sorts of other obligations unpaid. So it's there's a practical reason or an historical sort of backing as to perhaps why travel bans not only just exist in the system, in the legal system, but exist in practice and are so widely utilized. So therefore, in this kind of environment in the UAE, it is it's travel ban is an important tool of legal enforcement, and it is used by the courts to ensure that the debts are paid. It's also used to ensure that defendants remain present in criminal proceedings. This is also quite important. It protects creditors, it protects victims, and otherwise it supports the enforcement of UAE judgments. So without this mechanism, a judgment against a non-resident or even against a resident who may leave the country would be very difficult to enforce in practice. And that's basically why the system exists. And I'm sure we all know examples of judgments, final judgments in other countries in the West, where there's a clear judgment, money judgment, and the defendant has to pay, and they don't pay. And there's very little that one can do other than perhaps try to file bankruptcy proceeding against them. And so that's a pretty convoluted and expensive and difficult process to go through in those jurisdictions. So if you juxtapose those kinds of options or lack thereof in other jurisdictions and the options of a travel ban in the UAE, it is a quite an effective enforcement mechanism. Now, let's talk about the types of travel ban. So there are, there's many different types, and just for the purposes of today, I'll focus on a few most notable ones, and perhaps there's somewhat different in their sort of nature and type, but quite common. So in each one of these has, in one way or another, kind of a different legal basis and sort of different, and usually involves a different authority that sort of the triggers it and enforces it and different removal procedures. So let's start with perhaps the most obvious one. That's the one that back in the old days perhaps was kind of almost the main one, and that's the criminal travel ban. Now, why I say that in the past it was the main one is because a lot of even civil obligations, for example, like a check, a bounced check, or or some sort of a dispute over an employment dispute, over some allegations of, let's say, breach of confidential information and such, they often ended up with the criminal authorities and therefore led to a travel ban. So in the past, I mean, maybe like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that was kind of most of the travel bans were triggered through the criminal authorities, and particularly the police and the prosecutor. Even if they were more or less civil in nature. So, for example, also an unpaid mortgage or a bounced check that supported or guaranteed a mortgage payment. So many, many examples from the past, and we've covered this in previous podcasts. So, in this day and age, the UAE legal system has evolved tremendously and progressed by leaps and bounds. And so the criminal authorities, for the most part, only get involved now with criminal matters. And so anything related to civil matters, employment, real estate, so that basically they refer parties to the right authorities, civil authorities or civil courts, and they purely, for the most part, focus on criminal cases. So when we're talking about travel bans from a criminal perspective, we're talking about kind of the modern version of criminal travel bans. And so they arise under, not to get too much into nitty-gritty legalese here, but there is this specific law in the UAE, which is basically the criminal procedure law, and that law was introduced in 2022. So as I said, this is all fairly new, what we're talking about today. There's a different system that existed before the travel bans under the previous systems and laws and practice. But now the current criminal travel bans, they are subject to the criminal procedure law that's only less than 4 years old. And in fact, it was only introduced, actually came into effect in 2023, so 3 years ago. And in particular, there's Article 99 that ultimately allows or gives the authority to the public prosecutor to order an accused to be banned from travel. And that is the order that gets circulated to all the ports in the state, and it's issued by the prosecutor, not a judge. So this is important. So travel bans within the parameters of criminal authorities or criminal, this is a triggered off of a criminal violation, then they are issued by the prosecutor and not a judge. And then the accused is not really sort of heard before the order is made. And so that is also, and we can I can give you some context, specific context as we go through the process. But in most cases, especially in criminal cases, the accused at the other side does not know about the travel ban. So they find out about it when they're trying to leave the airport, trying to leave the country, and then they get arrested at the airport. That's basically, because I guess it's when it's done through the criminal proceedings, in most cases they should have at least gotten a call from the authorities to be requested to come and give their side of the evidence. Even if they were to come, it's not always the case that they will actually get a notification from the authorities stating that the travel ban has been placed on you. It really depends on the type of criminal matter, right? Because not all criminal matters is in the interest of the authorities to kind of notify the parties in advance. So it really, it's sort of, there's different type of the nature and so the gravity of the criminal offense. And depending on that, the authorities may or may not communicate some level and including the travel ban to the accused. That's called the criminal travel ban, and it happens in many different instances. And we will go through some examples, but that's basically at a high level. That's the one that's issued through the prosecutors. The other one is a travel ban that's issued kind of on the back of a civil matter, and that's went on the back of a final and enforceable court judgment. So, for example, let's say you have a creditor that filed a case against a debtor, and for whatever matter, let's say partnership dispute, one partner files a case against the other partner for some sort of some kind of unpaid or a dispute about the investment, and so there's a monetary request, claim, and then as part of that, in response to the claim, the court issues a decision granting some kind of a monetary compensation to, let's say, partner number one. So now you have a money judgment, and that money judgment does not get paid. So you can't request a trial ban right away. You have to, and in the UAE, you have three levels of the court proceedings. So it's a court of first instance, court of appeal, and court of cassation. If the court of first instance issues a judgment on the money judgment, you are not allowed yet to request for a travel ban on the basis of judgment. Then the case can get appealed. But if the case becomes final, in other words, it doesn't get appealed, then on the back of that final case, then you can file an enforcement case. And as part of the enforcement case, you can request, among other remedies, so a travel ban is placed on the defendant. So that's the court of first instance, but if the case is appealed to the court of appeal, then and the money judgment has been confirmed, then that point in time, the party can actually start enforcement proceedings and request a travel ban at that point. Although that travel ban will still be temporary because there's still court of cassation, and then the court of cassation. If the court of cassation reverses, then obviously the travel ban goes away. But if it gets confirmed at that point, other kind of enforcement mechanisms can be deployed. But the general gist of this particular travel ban is it's on the basis of a final court judgment. So now the final court judgment of itself does not trigger a travel ban. You need to file a separate case, which is an enforcement proceeding. So it's a separate court case where you're filing a case to basically enforce the payment of that specific judgment, a court judgment. And so, and as part of that remedy, as part of the enforcement cases, there's a list of remedies that one can ask. Again, and this is all with the objective of getting that money judgment paid. Again, the law and the jurisprudence continue to evolve. In the past, as part of the enforcement case and the sort of list of remedies, the travel ban is basically was just by default was issued, amongst other types of remedies such as account freezes or asset freezes and foreclosures and so on and so forth. So these days, depending on the matter at hand, the courts sometimes want to first see if other remedies have been exhausted, especially if it's a commercial matter. They place the burden on the claimant to show that other remedies, more like financial remedies, have been exhausted before the travel ban is issued. So, for example, going back to the money judgment, let's say for 500,000 dirhams, and so as part of the enforcement proceedings, the claimant should ask the court to find out whether the defendant had any bank accounts in the UAE, and let's say as part of the process, a bank account surfaces with 500,000 dirhams in it. So in that case, there is sufficient money to pay the judgment, so the travel ban is not necessarily logical, or certainly is not necessary, because there is enough money in the defendant's court file, or amongst the defendant's assets to settle the payment, the final judgment. So the moral of that story is that, again, travel bans used to be used a lot more commonly. They're in there today. They're not much, a lot more segregated to a specific topic, and the process is different. And furthermore, even in this case of enforcement, as I said, the courts place a higher burden on the claimant to prove that travel ban is actually necessary, so that there are no other means, because you're talking about the financial or sort of commercial decision or civil matter. So the courts expect the claimant to first prove that it's necessary to restrict the defendant from travel, because, let's say, they're afraid that the defendant is at risk of flight and will not settle the obligation. And that can only really happen if the defendant doesn't have any assets within the UAE. So that's the second travel ban, and that is, again, based on the enforcement proceedings that stem from a final court judgment. The third type of travel ban happens in what's called a precautionary attachment. It's also a court case, but in this is a court case that's still ongoing. So this instrument, again, it sort of exists under the same sort of the civil procedure law, and it allows a party that has a substantive case, and again, a money case, so a case for a specific amount of money, that they, once they file the case, or shortly after, they can request what's called a precautionary attachment on the defendant to ensure that the defendant either does not flee or that the assets did not get liquidated. So let's say, going back to the same example of someone owes, a partner owes, or investor owes his partner some sort of repayment of a loan, or repayment of some kind of an investment. So the partner number one is worried that his partner number two is going to flee the country and leave the country and perhaps take the money out of the country or liquidate other assets. So there is this instrument where the partner number one can file, it's called a precautionary attachment claim. And as part of the precautionary attachment claim, it's sort of similar a little bit to the enforcement mechanism that we discussed earlier. But as part of the precautionary attachment, the partner asks, as one of the remedies, the travel ban to be placed on the defendant. And however, the precautionary attachment is not an easily granted tool for a number of reasons. One, because it requires specific sort of legal process, one of which is that once you file the precautionary attachment, you must, within 7 days, file a substantive case. Or you can file a precautionary attachment once you have filed a substantive case. So one way or the other, you need to have a substantive case. So when you file a case, let's say for repayment of that investment against your partner, against your partner, and on the back of that, then while the proceedings are ongoing, because remember in the previous case we discussed a final court judgment where that sort of liability has already been determined. In this case, the liability just has not been determined yet. We're just starting out with a case. But if you want to start this kind of a case, if you think that there is a chance that your partner might escape, or at least liquidate his assets so that you will not be able to cover your judgment, then you can file what's called this precautionary attachment on kind of tied or in parallel with the substantive case. And the idea here is that, okay, you're filing your substantive case, you're still going to be arguing and trying to prove to the court that your partner, let's say, cheated you and actually owes you this money. But in the meantime, the court, as part of the precautionary attachment request, can not only freeze the accounts, but also place a travel ban on this partner to make sure that they don't leave the country. Now, you may ask, look, why would the court issue a travel ban, for example, if the assets are already frozen? And the idea here, again, going back to this, the history that we discussed earlier about the reason for the travel ban in the UAE is that if it's an expat partner, and obviously there's always a risk of flight. So in other words, they may leave and never have to come back and will never settle their debt. So that specific request for travel ban on the back of a precautionary attachment does exist. Now, precautionary attachment also costs quite a bit of money. So it's basically 5% or 6.5% of the amount that you're claiming. So it's not an inexpensive remedy. It is, however, filed what's called ex parte, which means without service to the other side, but you do need to put some serious money on the table. That's by way of court fees, one, and two, also by submitting a guarantee to the court that in the event this lawsuit, turns out to be frivolous or malicious, that you will compensate the other side for the damages they have suffered. So there is, the bar is quite, well, the threshold is quite high. So you need to have also a substantive case filed. B, you need to pay full court fees, that is 5% of the total amount, which can go up to 40,000 dirhams. And then, three, you also need to present an undertaking, a sort of a guarantee of sorts in the event this is a frivolous case that you will compensate the other side. So therefore, while the remedy exists, the threshold for issuing it or the legal framework that exists around it is fairly complex and sophisticated, and so it's not really sort of prone to abuse. So that's number three. That's number three. Number four is what's called the order on petition, and that's or confirmed debt. Now it's also done through all of these are sort of civil in nature, and order on petition is basically it's a judicial request or it's a court request, but it's an administrative request in a way. So it's done what's called ex parte, without notice to the other side, and therefore no opportunity for them to object to it. And it exists or it's available in cases, what's called the sort of order and petition, that it specifically relate to some sort of a confirmed debt. Now, the confirmation of debt, and we've done podcasts on this subject in previous podcasts, but confirmed debt could exist by form of, for example, a check that was issued and then bounced, or it could be an acknowledgement of debt that's been secured by the notary, or it could be some other undertaking that clearly states that basically, yes, I owe you this money. So on the back of that sort of confirmed debt, then the claimant can file what's called the order on petition, basically requesting for the judge to place a travel ban on the defendant because they have failed to pay what they have evidence of confirmed debt. Because it's obviously here you need to present documents that there is in fact a confirmation of debt. That's why I give examples of what would qualify, such as a check or an acknowledgement of debt, or sort of a document that's confirmed by a notary or the party itself. So once again, this is decided by the judge, a civil judge, and is decided on papers, but there's no hearing and there's no notice to the other side, so the other side would only know about it once the order or the travel ban has already been issued, and even then It's because it's down to the civil courts. They may not know about it. They may not know, get notice of it unless they're represented legally by lawyers, and the lawyers would notify them. Yeah, and this, you know, this specific remedy also exists in the specific laws on civil procedure, which is the Decree Law 42 of 2022, so fairly new, recent law. And the law, the specific provision, clearly sets out kind of the requirements for this type of travel ban to be issued in this case, and that's basically specific. The debt has to be specific, it has to be due, it has to be undisputed in amount, and it has to also be supported by written evidence, such as I mentioned, acknowledgement of debt or unpaid invoice or a check of sorts. So that's basically that's the travel ban on the back of what's called the precaution, the order and petition or confirmation of debt. So that's travel ban number four or fourth type. Fifth type is what's called the personal travel ban that can be issued not in a civil matter. So remember, we had criminal, now we have civil, and this is personal status, and that's basically family disputes, right? So this is the travel bans can be issued against a spouse, and or most oftenly is issued against children, and that's basically to prevent. It's in custody disputes and divorces, and it's ultimately to prevent one parent or another from taking the children outside the country until court proceedings finalize. So this is a different type of travel ban. It's based on obviously personal status laws, and it allows also, for example, it allows the spouse, let's say the mother or the wife, to file a travel ban against the husband while the proceedings, the divorce proceedings, are ongoing, for failure to pay alimony, right? Because, as we know, as a mother, you know, in many cases, mothers maybe stay-at-home mothers, and they don't have an independent income of their own. So therefore, when there's already a breakdown in the family sort of harmony, and the husband or the father leaves, and often the mother may have no income, a source of income, and if the father doesn't pay alimony, so that's pretty severe for the mother and the child or the children. And so that's basically why travel ban in a case like this exists, and it also happens pretty fast. It's also decided within the family court under the family sort of the personal status laws is decided pretty quickly. It's as well, it's an ex parte basis, which means without notice to the other side, and clearly, and all that the mother or wife has to show, for example, is that, well, I've requested this alimony, he hasn't paid alimony, so therefore I request a travel ban. And the courts usually issue pretty quickly, like overnight. Until basically then the burden falls on the father to make sure that they pay the alimony through the courts, and then they can lift the travel ban. So that's a different kind of travel ban that exists in that domain, so in the personal status domain. And as I mentioned earlier, that's between the spouses or soon to be ex-spouses. With regards to the children, so that's a travel ban that's preventing basically one parent or another from traveling the UAE, traveling from the UAE with the child without the permission of the other parent. So that's by the way a measure that is not just commonly used, but sort of quite welcomed within the family dynamic by a lot of parties that find themselves in a dispute with their partners, because it gives them this sort of sense of comfort. So at least the other parent cannot take the child and leave the country. Because again, if you keep going back to the history of why these travel bans as a mechanism exist in the UAE, it's all because there's so many expats here, and being an expat, we always have an option to leave. So the logic is that, for example, in the case of a mother or a father, they always have a second passport somewhere, so they could just, or second, or the only passport to a different country. So they'll be able to take the child and leave to a different country, and especially, so there's so many families in the UAE where parents come from different countries, different passports, and the children have yet other types of passports. So it's sort of in the interest of the family, so the logic goes, is to make sure that the court here that has the jurisdiction over the family can preserve the status quo and ensure that everybody stays here, that nobody can take the children without the consent of the other parent until the proceedings finalize. So that's the fifth type of travel ban. Now, the sixth one is an interesting one, and it's the one I have to tell you, I've been in the UAE for a very long time, and this one that's kind of has existed in the law per se, in the books, but it hasn't really been used very much because the threshold really should be kind of high in terms of it being granted, although the law is not as specific, for example, as it is in the other cases. And that is basically the law that allows to file for a travel ban before the substantive case has been filed. Because remember, we discussed about the criminal cases. Okay, that's sort of clear enough. Then we talked about the enforcement cases. And that's where you have a final court judgment already. Then we talk about precautionary attachment that's attached to a court judgment where the threshold is pretty high. And then we talked about the confirmation of debt. Again, there's a confirmed debt. And then we talked about the family dynamic, obviously. Again, it's all sort of done through a, and it's attached to a court case. But this one, it's basically you can file an order on petition, which is this administrative request to the court that's filed ex parte without the service to the other or notice to the other side before a substantive case is filed. So there's no case yet in court, and you lead in with the filing of, okay, I want to place such and such individual under a travel ban, even though you don't really have a substantive case filed yet. Well, now that is, so that particular remedy exists under the UAE Civil Procedures Law and articles in particular 324 and 326. And the logic is that it basically allows a creditor or any kind of civil claimant to apply for travel ban before filing the main lawsuit, if there is serious grounds to believe. So basically there's two conditions, really. But it leads in with a condition that the creditor believes that the debtor has serious grounds or reasons to believe the debtor or the defendant intends to leave the UAE. Now, that's a pretty loose, and if you think about it, a very generous statement or condition, because most you know, the UAE being mainly expats, it's most people here an argument can be made that that they intend to leave the UAE. So, because they all the expats obviously have passports of other countries. So that argument of okay, well, he's an expat, so therefore he obviously will leave the UAE, can be applied a little too generously or loosely or gratuitously. So that's basically that's one of the conditions. And then the other conditions is that the court requires basically written evidence of underlying claim or the risk of flight. And you know, there's not that many other kind of requirements. It's just, you know, there's a mention of, for example, that there has to be a sort of a sum or money owed, and that it has to be actually confirmed or at least has to be defined. But the emphasis in the law and how we have seen it be used or abused is that the risk of flight. So that was kind of the defining filter, is the risk of flight. And so that remedy we have seen recently been used, particularly in the context of tourists, right? Because, okay, so we've got three categories of sort of people in the UAE. We've got the UAE nationals, okay, arguing that a UAE national is at risk of flight is probably not an argument because this is their country. Now, making that argument against an expat who is a long-term resident in the UAE, I mean, that's becoming less. In the past, it was perhaps more more freely granted on that basis, but these days the courts say, well, just because you're an expat does not make you at risk of flight. But then you've got tourists, and tourists are not residents. So then obviously they are in the category, or they fall into the category that, you know, I guess even objectively, I truly at the highest risk of flight because they're only here temporarily. So this is the measure we have seen recently be applied against tourists. And I'll give you specific examples of you know, where it was used and how it was used. But that's important to note that this kind of travel ban is filed, again, before a substantive case is filed. And it's filed kind of on the back of, by order and petition, but it's on the back of, like, well, we've got a defendant who is at serious risk of flight because he's a tourist, he's leaving, so therefore let's file this travel ban before we actually gather our paperwork and file a substantive court case. And by the way, this specific provision does not follow through with the condition of having to file a substantive case. So whereas we discussed about precautionary attachment, there's a specific requirement that a substantive case has to be filed at least within 7 days from filing a precautionary attachment through which you would be requesting a travel ban. This particular provision does not require that. So that's why this specific law perhaps might have been abused or used a little too loosely recently, and then in some ways might have been kind of abused wrongfully. So that's the other type of travel ban, and we'll zero in more on that. So how are travel bans applied in practical terms? Tackled this a little bit already as I was going through the different types of travel bans, but more specifically, just so you can visualize. So there's the criminal matters and there's the civil matters. So in the criminal matter, the travel ban is applied basically directly by the prosecutor. It happens at the stage when the criminal complaint is filed. So let's say somebody claims that they were defamed through social media or in some sort of social media platforms, and they come to the police and say, "Show, look, such and such said such bad things about me in social media channels." And so that in the UAE, that's a criminal offense. And so if the authorities deem that evidence to be clear enough or sufficient enough, they will open what's called a criminal complaint. And in most cases, whenever they file or they open the criminal complaint, they also trigger a travel ban. So right away, kind of as part of the criminal complaint. Again, depends on the substance or the nature of the case and the substance of the evidence. But certainly, once that criminal complaint becomes a criminal case, so if the police feels that the evidence is sufficient enough to transfer the prosecutor, and becomes a criminal case, then that's when, in most cases, the travel ban is issued right away. And when it does, the party may not even know about it. They may not know that the criminal complaint has been filed against them, and certainly the travel ban. Now, as I say that, the systems are also evolving quite rapidly. And so these days, in most cases, the authorities now, whenever any one of these sort of requests are being filed against the party, in particular if they're residents, because residents here, you have the Emirates ID, and the Emirates ID has, at least in theory, they should, and that's kind of a subject for perhaps for another podcast, the Emirates ID should be linked to their email address and their registered phone number, and not to their PRO's phone number or email address. So therefore, whenever any of these claims or complaints or cases being filed against the residents, the systems are done in such a way or configured in such a way that there's a notification that goes to that party and through sort of the official contact details that are officially registered to their Emirates ID. So in the very least, these days we see more and more cases where when the criminal complaint is filed against the party, that they receive an SMS or WhatsApp or an email or a phone call that's basically such and such, a case has been open against you or a complaint has been filed, please come for investigation. So in most cases, when that happens, you can kind of assume, it depends on the nature of the allegation, but you sort of assume that whenever a criminal complaint is filed, there's a good chance that a travel ban is placed kind of almost automatically as part of it. Not when it's in the very sort of early stages of investigation, if it's kind of, if it's a minor offense, it's like a misdemeanor, necessarily. So sometimes the police will wait to receive more evidence and to investigate and question the other party before they decide whether this warrants a travel ban. But in many cases, whenever a criminal complaint is filed, you need to assume that the criminal the travel ban is also sort of triggered. And you will not necessarily receive the notification that the travel ban has been triggered in those kinds of cases. So then you've got those criminal cases. And civil matters, as I mentioned earlier, so it's all sort of done through the civil courts. Now, depending on how the case is filed, if it's, for example, the travel ban is issued by virtue of an enforcement case, in most cases, then the party, because there's already a court case, it has sort of progressed through different stages, and then that party would have been notified. So in most cases, they will receive a notification that the travel ban has been placed as part of the enforcement proceedings. But if it's done as an order and petition, for example, in the as I mentioned earlier, in the case where travel ban is filed by way of order and petition for risk of flight, then the other side does not even know about it, even though it's done through the civil courts. But it's not really communicated to the other side right away. In these kinds of civil cases, when we're talking, because remember I said that if the cases are filed against residents, more and more we can assume the residents will be notified in the very least that a travel ban or some kind of a case has been filed, because the authorities communicate and notify through send out notifications to the registered contact details, be it email or WhatsApp or SMS or phone number. But in the case of residents, obviously not residents, tourists, in the case of tourists, tourists don't have those official contact details registered with the UAE government. So they may not know, and in most cases they don't know, that a travel ban has been placed against them. So this is the instrument we have seen kind of at play, in particular in the context of tourists. So, for example, a tourist, again, I'll give you some saucy examples of specific court cases shortly, but this is what we've seen, that, let's say, a tourist does something in the UAE that will that gives either the creditor or criminal authorities, but or the creditor even grounds to file to claim a compensation for some kind of damage. So they can file with this order on petition, which happens, is usually decided by an urgent judge. It's an urgent request, and it's decided by an urgent judge, and it's decided usually within 24 hours. And because in the case of tourists, there's always that risk of flight, so it's at least logically and legally simpler to make the case to the court that because there's a tourist, they are leaving, they're obviously at the risk of flight, so we want to place a travel ban on them before a case is filed. So in that case, because it's a tourist, the tourists won't even know about it until they go to the airport, and at the airport they get pulled aside because they don't know why, and sometimes it takes quite a bit of time for them to realize or to learn why they have been detained, and then ultimately they will not be allowed to leave the country, so they'll be taken in most cases to jail and then to the relevant sort of police station, and at that point in time, depending on sort of what triggered the travel ban, they will be released until the proceedings will progress further. So that's in civil matters. It's all done through the courts, but depending on whether it's an enforcement case, a precautionary attachment, or payment order, an order and petition, or done because of risk of flight, an order on petition due to risk of flight, the communication to the other side is quite varied, and in most cases, the other side might be quite surprised. Be it through the criminal authorities or the civil authorities, whenever a travel ban is issued, it then gets basically circulated to the immigration. And so these days, the UAE being as digitally savvy and progressive as it has become over the last 6, 7, 8, 9 years, so authorities communicate with one another much more efficiently than in the past. So basically, whenever a travel ban is issued by, let's say, a criminal authority or court, between the time that the civil court, for example, or the prosecutor issues a decision for a travel ban and the immigration authorities, it's just a click of a button. So in the past, you would have had to go and take that letter to a specific authority, to immigration, say, I've got this, from the police station, please place such and such person on travel ban. These days, it's done a lot more efficiently and sort of digitally, and it's almost instantaneous. And without the notice of the other side. Now, how do you check if you have a travel ban? And we hear this quite, because the UAE is so technologically sophisticated, there's this sort of assumption, presumption, or expectation that it's very easy to go on some sort of system and check to see if you have a travel ban. It's not really the case. It depends on, once again, if you're a resident or if you're a tourist. So different options may be available or not. It also depends on the type of travel ban, but it's not as easily checked as one may think. Expecting the UAE being so technologically sophisticated that it would be so easily accessible. So the best way to learn to find out whether you have a travel ban is obviously in person. That's a sure way. So, but it carries its own risks, and especially if in fact there is a travel ban. So to find out, if you want to find out about, you know, not obviously everyone has the means to go on and hire somebody else to find out for them. So they may have to go find out in person. So you can either go to the police or you can go to the immigration, depending on what you suspect the travel ban may be. And you ask in person, do I have a travel ban on me? As I mentioned earlier, it's most direct and most certain way to find out, but it's also it carries most obvious risks, because if there's a travel ban, depending on the reason for that travel ban, there may also be sort of an expectation of some kind of detention. So that's why the person may not feel comfortable going and finding out on their own. But as I mentioned earlier, not all travel bans necessarily equate arrest order. So it's just you cannot leave, but that doesn't mean that you need to be detained. So it depends on the nature, sort of underlying nature. That's why I said it really depends on what the case, what you think that the travel ban may be triggered by, but it's obviously not comfortable to go to the authorities and ask about your own travel ban in the event you find that there's one. So that's option number one. The other option is to appoint somebody else to do it for you, so a trusted person, and to do this, you'll need to give them power of attorney. And that's a UAE legally tested power of attorney. These days, it's a lot easier to do it. It's all digital. In the past, you had to do it either in person or had to go through this a very complicated way through the legalization through the UAE embassy and so on and so forth. It was coming from abroad. So back in the old days, if you suspected you had a travel ban, that meant maybe that you also had a criminal case, so therefore even going to the notary personally and doing the POA was in itself kind of an impossibility. But these days, the systems, the sort of the practice, the jurisprudence, the sort of the legislative system kind of continues to progress by leaps and bounds, so it's not as scary as it used to be before, and there's so many other options to securely get a power of attorney without the concerns or the worries about being arrested, for example. So what you would do is you would grant a power of attorney to somebody you trust. And on the back of that, that doesn't have to be a lawyer, doesn't have to be even a family member, it can be anyone you trust. And so the power of attorney should specifically list the authority for that party to approach, for example, immigration authorities or police, to find out travel bans on your behalf. So with that document, they can go to the authorities and they can inquire. Either immigration or the police. Now, again, depending on the nature, the underlying nature of that potential travel ban, the authorities may or may not give information to that third party, even with the notarized POA. So that's important to remember. So it's still ultimately up to the discretion of the authorities to decide, you know, whether they want to share that information with a third party who is just, you know, a third party. Yes, they've got the POA, but they're not the party and they're not their lawyer. So it's works in most cases. It works, but depending if the offense is more severe, then they will not provide an information, and or if the authorities believe that they prefer to see the person, so they will not provide information, just because they prefer to have the person there in front of them question them directly, than to provide information to a third party. So there's that. So that's appointing a trusted person. And the third option, and that's perhaps the most secure and the most comprehensive and reliable option, is to hire a local advocate. So basically a UAE advocacy firm, and lawyer that is, but not just a legal consultant, but an advocate. And hire them, and then also as part of that engagement process, you will also be granting a power of attorney to them, and then them with the power of attorney and being your advocate, and they are registered with the UAE legal system as an advocate, then the authorities will definitely give them the information. So here, that's the most secure and safest way, but obviously that costs money. It's a process, it's engagement agreement, and so on and so forth. So it's a little more, it's a more involved process. So that's option number three. Now, option number four is if for cases that are stem from Dubai proceedings, so Dubai in particular sort of travel bans or bans that are issued out of from the Emirate of Dubai. There is also the Dubai Police app or the website. So this is a fairly new instrument that allows now parties to check to see if they have a travel ban. So there are some limitations. One is that it only applies for the time being, at least from what we understand and the way we've tested it. It only applies to Dubai matters. So if a travel ban, let's say, was issued by the Emirate of Ras Al Khaimah or Abu Dhabi, this may not come up through your Dubai app, Dubai Police app or a website view. That's one limitation. The other, perhaps not a limitation but a requirement, is that only available. That service is only available to the UAE residents. And that's, UAE residents who have an active UAE pass. In other words, you can only, so that service is available if you enter the UAE, the Dubai Police, either Dubai Police app or Dubai Police website, through the UAE pass. Once you enter it that way, then you'll be able to sort of see if the travel ban exists, and then some of the results that kind of as part of that search that will yield, for example, the case number and the issue entity and the department name and the charge associated with the travel ban and also the amount of the fine if relevant. So this is a fairly new mechanism. It is available to at least Dubaians, if you will, but it only applies to UAE residents. And in theory, there's a request there that shows travel ban that not only will it show you the travel ban itself, but also the background on the basis of which that travel ban was issued. So this is a new service and highly welcomed, obviously, for all those who may be worried. So this is direct. You don't need to hire anyone. You can check yourself. And this is, if you have all the sort of, if you meet all the conditions and you can access the system, that's a pretty safe and comprehensive and accurate check. The option five is through Abu Dhabi Judicial Department. So now this one they have a special sort of service. It's called Estafsar service, or, forgive my kind of wrong Arabic, but it's basically an inquiry. So, and it is simple inquiry request addressed to ADJD, which is the Abu Dhabi Judicial Department, in other words, Abu Dhabi Courts. And, when you make that request, it returns a whole list of all the cases that are filed against you. So it's not just a criminal case. It's not just travel cases. It just gives you the full list of all the cases that have been filed against you, including any travel bans. And the advantage of the ADJD system is that it requires only the Unified Identification Number, or it's called the UID, and not Emirates ID. In other words, you don't have to be a resident here. You don't need to have UAE pass, and therefore, it is available also to tourists as long as you have the number of your UID, which is the Unified Identification Number. And that's basically kind of, again, a new service. It sort of remains to be seen how accurate or how comprehensive it is. But it's a new benefit and a new access point that now gives more visibility and more accessibility to information to even to tourists. Now there is also, because UAE residents, Dubaians, however you want to call them, we've gotten a little spoiled with the UAE being so technologically sophisticated. So we know all these different apps. If you have UAE pass and you have the different apps, you expect for things to work really well. You have the GDRFA app, you have the ICP app, these are immigration apps. And so there's this belief that, I can check my travel status or travel ban through the GDRFA app, which is the Dubai immigration, or the ICP, which is the federal immigration app. So now GDRFA does have a service. So it's, this is available, again, if you have a UAE pass. But it has a service and a GDRFA to lift the travel ban. So there is that service. But it does not, for the time being, have an option for you to see if you have travel bans and what the travel bans are. It just basically has a request to lift the travel ban. So just for all those who think, because we have heard it recently from clients, I will just go and check on GDRFA if I have a travel ban, so I will know. So just a little bit of a kind of a notice that, yes, there is sort of a service for a travel ban, but it's only to lift the travel ban, not necessarily inquire whether you have one. So you know, presumably that's just a matter of time before that service becomes available through GDRFA as well. But for the time being, it's limited in what you can do with regards to the travel ban. So now let's talk about specific sort of examples in practice. How does the travel ban kick in, or where would it be? And these are all from our own cases, and we have so many, but this is just some of kind of the more perhaps more interesting examples. And I've already said this, like from the criminal proceedings perspective, it's a case for defamation. So let's say somebody said something inappropriate in social media against you. You can file a case against them with the police. You can go report the police if you have the right evidence, which basically is the social media information that has to be legally translated and such. And then just on the back of that, the person will be, you know, you can request for the police, or the police will actually do it themselves to place that individual kind of in a travel ban tag. So it's something as minor as that. It can trigger a travel ban, and it's we have seen it in practice. So then drunk driving, we've seen that as well. So we've had a number of cases where a person was, you know, stopped by the police either because, you know, because they were in an accident and they were under the influence, or because it was just a random check and they end up having had a drink or two. And that something as innocuous, or at least maybe visibly innocuous as that, will also lead to a travel ban. So let's say if there is a car accident in particular, and if there's that's attached to a DUI, so you're drinking and driving, then almost automatically you need to assume that there'll be a travel ban on you. So for a car accident, so there's that, and then there's and then there's other sort of criminal matters where there's a concern basically the individual can leave the country. I mean, it's just drug obviously allegations, and so theft and so on and so forth. So there's many different examples, but so perhaps the ones that surprise many, including residents, is like I said, for example, defamation, something as, you know, like you said something disparaging about someone, but using social media platforms, that in the UAE is a criminal offense. Another one, let's say, and this for tourists, by the way, like they flipped somebody off. We recently had a case as well. Some tourists were here, road rage, and that does happen. I'm sure those people who suffer from road rage, they would know how that makes them feel. So we had recently a case like that where a tourist was just not knowing, but felt very passionate driving and expressed their feelings or dismay with some hand gestures that were inappropriate. Little did they know, they did not know, but they were reported to the police, and right away travel ban was placed. So that's another example sort of that may shock many, and that's kind of why we're doing this podcast to begin with. It's just to give you different data points, just to make you realize that it can happen a lot faster in a lot more situations, and sort of common situations that we'd never consider this to be an option in your own country. So then also we've seen cases, for example, in landlords who have a judgment against their tenant that's for unpaid rent or improper sort of, you know, departure from the property. So and that if you have an RDC case, or from the rental court case, judgment against the tenant and they have not paid as part of the enforcement proceedings that we discussed, travel ban. So yeah, we've talked about the court case, but, you know, there's a sort of a simpler court cases like a rental dispute through the rental courts, which happen much faster. And tenants, again, don't think much about it. Okay, well, you know, I didn't pay the rent, whatever. Just, you know, let them chase me. In the meantime, it's quite, you know, the process for filing a rental dispute by a landlord for unpaid rent is fairly streamlined and efficient, and the road to it is, you know, if once the landlord wins that that judgment, and it happens, just could be a matter of a few weeks, they'll file an enforcement case, and then there's your travel ban on the back of that enforcement case. So that happens a lot more often and a lot quicker than one would believe. So that's just kind of in the landlord-tenant sphere, also just beware. And then you've got this, obviously the commercial creditors, and we've used a few examples of that. So Let's say somebody owes money to someone else, and it's backed by an acknowledgement of debt. You know, an acknowledgement of debt is basically, it's called an executor instrument. So if the party does not pay, you basically just go to the court right away and file as an enforcement mechanism as an executor instrument, and right away you can request a travel ban. So it can happen very quickly, and it's used quite a bit, by the way, by banks and sort of suppliers and other commercial counterparties. Once again, in those cases, it's done without a hearing and by an urgent judge, sort of as an urgent request, and so happens quite quickly and without much knowledge. Now, how do we remove travel bans? So the procedure for removal depends on the type of ban. If it's a criminal ban, so it stands from a criminal offense, the easiest way is to obviously, let's say, it depends on what the criminal allegations were or the judgment is about, but so the fulfillment of the judgment. So let's say sometimes as part of the judgment, the criminal judgment, the penalty is to serve time in jail. So once you've served that time in jail, then basically the judgment is may be deemed to have been served, and therefore then on the back of that, you can remove the travel ban. Or, for example, there's a criminal judgment for, let's say, defamation. Defamation these days, for the most part, it does not, depending on the type of defamation, it does not lead to a jail sentence, but there is a fine. So in a lot of these cases, especially misdemeanors these days, the criminal cases, and therefore the criminal, the trial bans that stem from these sort of criminal matters, the criminal judgments ultimately result in a fine. So it's not a jail sentence, it's not deportation, it's just a fine. So, but before, it's almost like it's automatic kind of a default. When the judgment is issued, a travel ban is issued as well. It gets only removed once you have paid that fine. And by fine, I mean, it could be 1,000 dirhams, you know, for example, defamation, it's 1,000 dirhams, 5,000 dirhams. So it's not a significant amount in the grand scheme of things, but you do need to go and pay it. But it doesn't end there. So it's you have a system kind of efficiency cross communication amongst agencies doesn't quite work, you know, on the other end as the same way that works on kind of on the entry. So in other words, let's say you paid your fine, the criminal fine, then you need to obtain a letter from the prosecutor to shows that you have paid that fine, and then therefore the travel ban can be removed. And on the back of, then you take that letter, it's sort of the obligation is on you to go then to the relevant authorities and say, okay, I've got the letter from the prosecutor, for example, so now the fine should be removed. So it doesn't necessarily get triggered through the system automatically once the fine is paid. In some cases it may be, but it really depends on the underlying allegations, underlying sort of criminal proceedings. But in most cases, if you find yourself on the receiving end, you need to be prepared and be prepared for a little bit of legwork. So you need to sort of boots on the ground and kind of go and fight for yourself and make sure that travel ban, that you get all the right letters to get the travel ban removed. So that's in criminal cases. Now in civil cases, it's done, for example, when the judgment, let's say, if it depends on the type of civil dispute. So if it's an enforcement of a judgment, so once that judgment is paid off, the travel ban is removed. But again, there too, if you've paid, since it's through the civil courts, you've paid the judgment to the courts, and then you have to make the request to the court to show, listen, I've paid the judgments, so please remove the travel ban. So it doesn't happen automatically. Or, for example, if you have a judgment and you are not able to pay, but you have a settlement with the other side to pay a lesser amount. So once again, you need to kind of register the settlement to the courts and ask the court on the basis of that settlement to remove your travel ban. So that's basically in civil cases. Or sometimes, let's say if you have a precautionary attachment and the travel ban is based on the precautionary attachment because the creditor believes that you may be at risk of flight, let's say, and there is a judgment for 100,000 or a claim for 100,000 dirhams, and that's what you can do, but you are disputing it. So what you can do is you can deposit that money on the court's account as a guarantee, and then release the travel ban as a result. So you're basically guaranteeing, because it's that travel ban is placed in the back of a civil case, or you're there for a monetary, basically, claim. So you can cover it instead of a travel ban. You can cover it with the monetary security, i.e. the amount of money that's at stake, and put it with the court. In a sort of a form of like a bail, if you will, in civil cases. So that's another way of doing that. Usually in most cases, basically, whatever it may be, if there is a monetary request for something, you can kind of lift it. Sometimes also especially in criminal cases, it may be possible, it's becoming less so now, but there's also a mechanism that allows for you to remove a travel ban if you allowing you to travel if you're the person that's subject to a travel ban, and it propose two individuals, sometimes three individuals, and as guarantors for that case. So in the past, this was a lot more common. So for example, somebody's placed on a travel ban and they need to travel, and they will ask their relatives to come forward and put their passports instead as guarantees, as guarantors for that person, so they will come back. So those systems, kind of that mechanism, used to be more common in the past, and I think a lot of people ended up in a very precarious situation where the debtor never came back, and so they placed a pledge, their own passports, their own freedom of movement, supporting on the back of somebody who ultimately let them down. So there's fewer people that are willing to put up guarantees. That's one. And then two, also depending on the sort of nature of the case that triggers that ban, sometimes the courts or the authorities will not allow for the parties to basically deposit passports or somebody else as in case of them. Much of it also depends on the authorities. Now, and finally, a travel ban can also be, removed by way of a grievance. A grievance means basically you're challenging the grounds for travel ban. It's also done ex parte on the other side to the court, and you're saying, listen, this travel ban should not have been issued because it didn't meet the legal requirements. So that's another way of lifting it, and that there is a matter of proof. And I will give you specific examples of how that's that's done in court. So now let me just kind of give you two examples at a high level, just to show you how. Important it is to know the UAE legal system and feel a sense of accountability and responsibility for what happens in the country and not just leave. And in particular, in the case of tourists, because obviously residents of the UAE, they're better informed, they're better versed in how the country works, the country's laws and regulations than tourists, obviously. And so it happens, perhaps, they're a little wiser about the way they conduct themselves and, the information that they sort of rely on and the actions that follow than tourists. But this, these two specific examples, the tourists can often sort of fall on their sword, if you will. And this happens a little too common. So this is why I wanted to give these two specific examples to contextualize and show you how quickly this travel ban can affect somebody who otherwise doesn't really have much of a relationship to the UAE, or so they think. So, for example, recently we had a case where tourists, European nationals, came to the UAE. It was basically a family that father and daughter came to visit the UAE. Long story short, the father ended up getting sick and accepted, admitted to the hospital because of sort of nature of the underlying medical conditions. He wasn't able to sign for himself, so the hospital also asked the son to sign or the daughter to sign for the father. And so ultimately, thankfully the father was treated and cured and he was fine. But when the bill came, it was like for 300,000 dirhams, and the family doesn't have this kind of money. And so so they left the hospital. Obviously the hospital couldn't, keep them there against their will. And so they left with these bills unpaid. Long story short, the hospital filed a civil case against them and against actually both of them for payment of that hospital bill, 300,000 dirhams. Sadly, in this particular case, in fact, somehow the hospital did have contact details of the two parties, and so therefore when they filed the case, the court did communicate with the parties, and the parties knew about the court case, but they you know, disregarded it because they thought, ah, it happens in the UAE. We live in Europe. You know, this is, you know, it's just a sort of, it's not worth our time. So that's what I'm saying, sadly, because they actually had noticed that there were court case, was filed in the UAE, but they just basically decided to ignore it. So as a result, in the hospital here, filed the case because, you know, as it's, and this is important, perhaps this is a subject for a different podcast, a dedicated podcast, but for hospital, the hospitals have their own insurance against unpaid medical bills. And so, but for them to tap into that insurance, they need a court judgment. So they're filing this judgment against these parties, not necessarily they're expecting these parties to pay, but also they need, if the parties don't pay, they need the insurance to cover. So that's why the hospital almost has no choice but to file a case if the individuals don't pay. And so they filed the case, and you know, because they didn't represent themselves. And because, as I said, the daughter here signed off on behalf of the father, which basically meant that there were two defendants. The hospital filed a case, so the daughter ended up being a guarantor, so submitting herself as a guarantor. So the case was filed against both people, the father and the daughter. And so because they didn't represent themselves, there was a court of first instance that was, the decision was issued against them for the payment of that money. And because they didn't represent themselves, basically the judgment became final, without having been to be appealed because, you know, they didn't show up. Although they knew about it. So as a result, the hospital has a final court judgment, and we talked about it earlier, and the back of, you know, that final court judgment, it files an enforcement proceedings, and now it files, as part of those enforcement proceedings, it requests a travel ban. So now the father and the daughter find out that, oh, well, yeah, we don't live in the UAE, but we really like the UAE. We like coming here. And, in fact, my son or the daughter had prospects of actually working in the UAE as well, or perhaps at least traveling for work to the UAE. But now there is this not only travel ban, but there is a money judgment that needs to be paid, which is 300,000 dirhams, plus there's travel ban against both the father and the daughter. So there is a kind of a moral of the story. Don't ignore it. Take it seriously. And here is a specific example of how a travel ban can kick in to someone who would otherwise never have imagined that this would be applicable to them. So that's case one. And then the second case is these are all very recent cases. It's a car rental company that's filed a case against a tourist who rented a car and was in the car accident. It was a luxury car and a luxury sort of car rental company. And by the way, contractually and legally in the UAE under the Unified Insurance Act in the UAE, all car rental companies are covered by insurance. That's just, you know, even if in circumstances where otherwise insurance would not cover, for example, drunk driving, right? But if it's a tourist, you know, if it's a car rental, so basically the car is still covered. It logically makes sense. Anyway, so there was a, you know, another client, it was a tourist, rented a car, it was in a car accident, and the car company, there was a car accident, but the tourist or the client, you know, understandably expected that, well, the car is covered by insurance. I paid plenty because it was a luxury car. Not only did I pay plenty for the car itself, but I also paid for the insurance to add to it. So it's all covered. So I don't need to worry about it because I already paid for the insurance. And that's the usual expectation when you go and rent a car. So it's basically, that's why you take car insurance. That's why you pay this insurance. So especially for luxury cars, you cannot rent a luxury car without insurance. So in this particular case, the client figured, okay, well, you know, basically the car is covered by insurance, so no big deal. Well, not so, because the rental car decided that it needed, you know, so alleged that the driver owed it money, either more money than they basically, in their sort of, according to them, that insurance would cover, although, you know, that's a sort of topic for another podcast, or that there were some other additional charges that needed to be settled, like administrative charges and so on and so forth. So it basically had a whole litany of payments that it wanted the other side to pay as well. So not just the insurance company, but also the driver. So long story short, in that case, it filed that other travel ban that I mentioned earlier, the ones that before the substantive case is filed. So it's an order on petition. You file it overnight. They filed, okay, this person is a tourist. You know, it was a car accident. You know, and here's basically the documents that shows that he rented the car and that this is the accident report. And so he owes us, you know, something like 200,000 dirhams. and so put a travel ban on him. So this is just a request for a travel ban without a substantive case. And because it's these are kind of urgent requests, they go to urgent judges, and so the request was granted. So here's a tourist who just came to the UAE for, you know, sort of, it was a, supposed to be kind of a short, fun trip, rented a luxury car, spent a lot of money, you know, and got into car accident, fine, but thought, okay, he had paid and covered it and didn't really give it any more thought. I didn't even know, right, because this specific travel ban is filed without a substantive case. And because he's a tourist, he doesn't, there's no other way for him to be notified about any of these cases. So did not know that there's a travel ban on him. Anyway, in that case, we actually filed a grievance, and I discussed this before, that there is a method under the same law to file a grievance, and basically it's because and that with the rental company and that's the basis on which the rental company received this travel ban or had the court issue a travel ban, is that it said it's risk of flight tourist, yes, that's easy enough, and just said, well, there is amount that's due. But what the law actually requires, and this is on the basis of which we filed the grievance, is that it's not just the amount that you're claiming. The amount has to be confirmed. It either has to be confirmed by a judgment, or it has to be confirmed, preliminarily confirmed by a judge, or it has to be at least confirmed by an expert. You know, it cannot be. So it has to be a defined amount. So it cannot just be, well, you know, you owe me 200,000 dirhams, so therefore, you know, I place a travel ban, which makes sense, because otherwise it would be just too dangerous of a tool and can really be prone to abuse. So there's that, plus the court also said, well, because it's a rental car business and it's a rental car, so by default and by law, then there is coverage, insurance coverage, and just the fact that it's a rental car that's covered by default by insurance makes the sort of the compensation against the driver or the defendant highly suspect. So therefore, the amount that's claimed is not confirmed. It's not certain. So there's no grounds to actually for that travel ban to have been issued. So in this case, when we filed grievance to lift the travel ban, it was lifted. So that's an example for you of how different travel bans can be issued and how, you know, it can be lifted or not. But in this case, clearly because the legal requirements for the travel ban were not fulfilled, the court of sort of the urgent judge kind of granted it because it was an urgent request. When we filed it to the actual judge to review it on legal grounds, it was obvious that the legal requirements were not met. So in summary, it's kind of been a long discussion, but I think it is an important discussion because it affects so many different people. And unfortunately, we've seen so many people kind of get trapped in this because they just don't have the right information, or they don't, and therefore they don't conduct themselves with the right sort of information in mind. So to summarize, the UAE has at least six types of categories of travel ban. There's the criminal travel ban that's issued by public prosecution. There's executory travel bans that are issued by the judge after a final court judgment. There's precautionary attachments, travel bans that are issued as an interim protective measure. Then there's travel bans on order and petition based on a confirmed debt. And then there's the personal status travel bans against a spouse or children in the custody disputes. And then there is the civil risk of flight travel bans issued before a substantive case is filed. This is an important kind of subject for many reasons, as we've discussed. So the mechanism is used quite widely. It can be triggered quickly. And in many cases, the affected person is not notified in advance. A person can find themselves subject to a travel ban without prior warning. And examples that I've illustrated sort of show that specific point. A patient who left the country after partial payment of a medical bill, or a driver who left the country after a disputed accident, both ended up in sort of subject to travel bans and then the consequences of what that means we've discussed specifically. So for this reason, obviously vigilance matters, so does the proper information, and so does proper legal advice and early and timely. So the available remedies are time sensitive, and that's also important to underscore. And the right procedural route depends on the category of a ban. So acting promptly and through the correct mechanism makes a huge difference. And that's all for this episode of Logical with Ludmila. If you found this episode useful and you like what we do, you can always find more on our website, which is lylawyers.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And for the full experience, you can watch our video podcast on YouTube. Until next time, stay informed, stay safe, and keep things logical.